teams at Collaborate effectively create some of the most inspired and compelling work. Co-founder and director of Better Work, Palesa Sibeko, joins us to share some insights on team dynamics. How can organizations rethink how they work and get the most out of their teams?
What gets rewarded also drives or contributes to the behavior and as a consequence, influences the culture. So I hear a lot of the time organizations that say they want a collaborative workplace, all these things, and then they go and reward individual effort.
In this episode, Palesa unpacks some of their findings and ways that they've helped both creative and corporate teams rethink their work.
Every single person in the world has the ability to be creative, but you just need to give them the right environment for it. And in the workplace, that type of environment, what we've always tried to do as well is create time for people to be able to think qualitatively.
We also talk about how team dynamics, purpose, and inclusivity contribute to making organizations and their teams more effective.
Great ideas can come from anybody. Can we create the space for someone to safely try out the execution of that idea of just testing out some aspect of it and then see what happens? And I think, you know, just allowing that that kind of exploration for people and be able to bring it back to the fold, and then we can chat about it and go and see, is this something that we actually want to go through with or not?
Where should you start in reimagining work? This is The Lead Creative. Welcome to the Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Mongezi Mthathi. Enjoy the show, and please share and subscribe. Palesa, thank you very much. Thank you very much for making the time to chat to us today. It's been a while since we've last spoken. How are you doing?
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for choosing me to interview for this topic.
It's not even an interview, right? It's like having a coffee, basically.
Palesa,
I know you love gaming quite a bit, and you've spoken a bit about gaming. So before we actually get into, a lot of what we're going to talk about today, how is your work similar to gaming or similar to some of the games that you love?
That's an interesting question. So I suppose what I love most about gaming is just this idea of exploration, taking on somebody else's character and being thrown into a world, and they're able to go and discover it, able to meet different characters, and they somehow challenge perhaps some part of your thinking, your part of your being, and so forth. With some of the RPG or role-playing games that I've been playing of late, in any case, they actually give you quite complex tasks and you have to make very difficult decisions. So in that way, I've actually been able to learn about myself. So it's a part simulation. Yeah. And then also having lots of fun while doing it, like appropriate challenge at the right level. So I think then the way that's similar to my work is that a lot of it is quite exploratory. I meet a lot of people, get to learn about how people think and view things. And I, you know, I get to be part of guiding them towards a better place. I mean, a lot of games make you the hero at the end of the day.
Exactly,
Well, I suppose the difference there was that I'm not the hero, the client is always the hero. But, you know, I get to be part of that journey, and that feels quite special to me.
Awesome. Palesa, talk us through some of your thinking at Better Work, more so how you gather insights for brands and the organizations that you work with, and what you find most interesting in team dynamics as you gather some of these insights. So what insights are they, and what do you look for in some of the findings, and what are some of the most prevalent things that come up in team dynamics?
So a lot of the work that we do is it requires that we discover the teams, but more importantly that the teams themselves discover themselves. So I would say the way that we gather information is actually with them. They actually go out and to go and discover with our guidance some of what the current system may look like, the system of work.
Right.
And then, of course, just depending, of course, on what the requirement for that particular program is. And they actually get to be for a few weeks or so, they get to be where the researcher had at discovering themselves, discovering parts of the organization and how they function. So that's how we do that. And then we typically gather around and speak about what they have discovered and what their thoughts are on that, you know, do a bit of sense making essentially of what the data has, what data has come out of that. So, I mean, you asked also, what do we look for? Again, it depends on what the outcome is, but I would say a lot of the time it's just for them to go and, you know, things that they took for granted, I would say, that just work, for them to actually put on a different hat and look at them a little bit differently and start asking more interesting questions about that. So if they are finding, for instance, that their meetings to work, they're completely ineffective, and then we'll ask them in that situation to not be, not take on the same role that they usually do, which is probably the victim to those ineffective meetings, but perhaps wear designer's hat, get curious as to why they're not working. So they would, we would help them, you know, just develop some kind of lens. What are the questions that they need to be asking themselves? And then they develop their own most of the time. And then we come back and we speak about those. In terms of team dynamics, that varies quite a bit, but I would say what's most prevalent is probably the idea of the boss or the leader being the person who not only drives the team, but who also makes all the decisions and somehow is the harbinger of all knowledge. So I think sometimes there is just that tension that comes out of that, because the way that I view it is not always necessarily true. And yeah, there have been some really interesting stories that have actually come out of that. Other dynamics would be if, you know, if people consider the workplace to, let's say, toxic, people have used this word, and the dynamic there would be, this is just not a safe enough space for me to function at my best capacity. And it's due to, I don't know, there's the cultural fear. There's, you know, this place does not necessarily allow me to be my full self. And to various other things, I suppose, that people have actually shared with us. But yeah, I mean, it really depends on the type of treatment to work with in terms of dynamics.
Yeah. I'm guessing then that with what you bring to the table, teams are able to almost rethink what they're all about. They're almost able to rethink the sort of team versus organization relationships and how those kind of work together. And a lot of the time, especially within, in fact, I mean, within the creative space, but also outside of the creative industries, there's a lot of talk around purpose and vision and mission. And more so, I feel like there's a lot of, I think, desire for purpose among team members or among people who work in organizations. Do you find that a clearly defined purpose makes a team work better, or is purpose something that, you know, we brandy about when actually it's bandied about, but not really. It doesn't really translate. Does it translate across the organizations that you talk to?
The purpose topic is always so interesting to me, because we actually went through a journey where we were, through very short engagements or the amount of time that you were allowed, we would help teams perhaps discover what their purpose is and then write a purpose statement, that sort of thing. And I think the results were good for the session. So I would, you know, give it a nice green tick, like, hey, we achieved that. But I think the hard work of actually making that purpose resonate throughout the organization is a lot tougher, and it can take a long time. And I mean, it depends. With some organizations, if their purpose was really strong and resonated with a lot of people at the beginning, then they've got a lot less work to do than people who are maybe trying to revise what their purpose is. Or they just, when people were being onboarded, for instance, there just wasn't effort really to try and help people understand why this organization exists. And in terms of whether that helps team performance, I would say yes in my experience, because more and more I'm seeing, especially with the younger people at work, they want their work not only to matter to themselves, but it should matter to also other people. So how is it impacting our clients? How is it impacting the industry we're in, or even the communities in which we operate? So I wouldn't say it's necessarily a new desire by people. I think that's just a human need. We all want to feel purposeful. But I would say that the younger generation, they are a little bit more insistent on that actually mattering in the workplace, and that it's integrated into their everyday work. And with that, I think what you start to see is that people just feel a little bit more inspired, and they're more energized to do the work, because they see that there's this arc of, you know, from my effort has equaled this type of change, you know, with the customer, just closing that loop.
Yeah. On the subject of people being inspired, on the subject of inspiration in general, what do you find? I mean, you worked quite a bit within the creative industry before going solo, and you know, and going into your entrepreneurial journey, and you know, first start or being part of, I think, Signal, and now being part of Better Work, like, you know, the growth trajectory that you followed after being in the creative industry. Do you often look back to what makes creative teams work and what makes them tick, with the lens now of working within the space of reimagining work, or how work could be?
Could you rephrase that? I think I kind of lost.
Yeah, like what sort of thing or things, I guess, inspire or find, or you find inspire creative teams? Having worked with creative teams yourself as a creative mind, and now looking at teams with the lens of making work better, what do you find makes those creative teams tick and work, and you know, be inspired? You mentioned inspiration, so I just want to, I think, expand a bit on that.
Right. I mean, the purpose one is a big one. I think what we've always tried to do with any of the organizations we've worked with, I mean, including our own companies, is just make it very apparent as to what it is that you're working towards. I think we, a lot of the time, involve people in discussion. I know it's not always possible in the larger organizations to do that at that level, but we're never, you know, just as the co-founders having private conversations and then just going back to the team and go, right, now you guys have to go and execute. I think a lot of the time we developed a lot of our vision together, and then we decided together also how we're going to execute on it. So I would say that, like, just having some sort of purpose, which is quite inclusive in how it's developed, is quite useful. Also, just creating the right environment for people to actually really thrive. And these are also just human traits. That was a core belief, is that every person in the world has the ability to be creative, but you just need to give them the right environment for it. And in the workplace, that type of environment, what we've always tried to do as well is create time for people to be able to think qualitatively. I think there's just what I've seen in agencies is just, it isn't enough time, you know, between tasks for them to just sit quietly, choose to not necessarily think about the next task or anything else, or for that matter, maybe don't have a point to your, say, 30-minute to 1-hour session to just quietly think. And that, I think, could be looked down upon, like you're not being productive or anything like that. And yet, as a knowledge worker, if your brain is probably one of your greatest assets, why wouldn't you nurture it in that way? And we've seen through some of the work that we've done when people have run experiments in that way, they've really started to connect the dots with some interesting things in their workplace. And in some cases, even saved the organization a lot of money. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of those things. And we were also really big on experimentation. So we believe ideas can come from anybody. Can we create the space for someone to safely try out the execution of that idea of just testing out some aspect of it and then see what happens? And I think, you know, just allowing that that kind of exploration for people and be able to bring it back to the fold, and then we can chat about it and go and see, is this something that we actually want to go through with or not? So, I mean, that requires a level of autonomy that you need to actually afford people in the workplace. So, I mean, as and I've seen this and even in corporate structures where the teams are allowed such a level of autonomy that they feel just a little bit more comfortable for them to actually explore the edges or just like some more interesting things. And that for me is one of the ways that you can even increase your innovation capability.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show. Let's talk a little bit about this sort of post-COVID world that we find ourselves in, right? And the fact that we've gone back to the office and abandoned our shorts because we can't work from home anymore. Besides that, what else have you noticed changed about people and people's expectations going back to the office or post-COVID in how we engage with work and how we engage as teams and how we collaborate? How did that time change us? Or how did that time fundamentally, in your finding, change our, what we expect out of our teams and what we expect out of the workplaces that we're in now?
I think some people needed to be dragged back into the office. They're just so used to now being able to control their space and the pace at which they conducted the work. And they were probably less distractions for some people that they've reported, you know, just being able to be in their own space. Now being back in the office, I think some people have struggled with what they would view as very ineffective ways for them to collaborate with their colleagues, such as yet another one-hour meeting and another while where they were remote. I think they relied on a lot of the technologies to actually communicate, and that mitigated the need to have meetings. That's not true for everybody, of course. So there are some people who have told us that they used to have lots of meetings while they were working remotely. And because some of the time it would be the leader just needing to have some sort of point of connection to people and just know that people are still actually engaged in the work, that sort of thing. I think something else that they reported struggling with this one team I'm thinking of in particular is that they had discovered through the remote working period during COVID that they didn't actually need their manager. They were able to actually conduct the work then themselves. So this manager started becoming redundant. So now back in the office, it's a little bit awkward because we've kind of created new processes that are actually more efficient and we don't need this guy at all. So
that's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you there. I think that's interesting because I think it talks back to this point of giving people more autonomy, doesn't it? That perhaps once you discover that the role of the manager isn't what you thought it was, perhaps the role changes. Perhaps it becomes a more collaborative role. Perhaps it becomes something else. Have you found anything or given some thought to, in those instances, what then? How do you then approach work if you find that, for instance, someone's role isn't what you thought it was? Because if you give people enough autonomy, they think for themselves and need the manager less to kind of, almost in inverted commas, think for them.
So as a manager, I would I would welcome that. If I think if you have like a healthy attitude towards leadership, that people aren't dependent on you to go and do their work well. Then now you need to think about how you actually can be of assistance. How do I actually make these people function to their best capability, essentially? And I mean, some managers have found that they needed to actually develop other skills as well. So part mentorship, part coaching, all of that, and they start integrating that. Like, maybe they have more one-to-ones to go and understand this person a bit better. What are the things that are getting in their way that keep them from actually doing the kind of work that can actually really propel their career or even contribute really well to the organization? So mm-hmm. I think it is a wonderful opportunity to rediscover your role, find out what that thing is and how you can better serve your team, rather than seeing it as some people have seen it, and then in terms of just a negative vibe, and they try to regain control through very antisocial means. They just go back to the micromanaging and other very antisocial, or very ineffective ways to actually lead their teams.
Yeah. On that point, I think on unhealthy ways of, I suppose, team dynamics or managing a team or working with a team, what have you found holds teams back from effective collaboration, from collaborating effectively and I suppose putting out the best work that they can? Are you finding anything in the data and conversations that you have with teams that kind of holds them back or doesn't bring out the best in the teams themselves?
Yes, I would say because a lot of the data that we get is self-reported, right? So like these are people at those teams are telling us. One of the first things that they speak about is how they just don't have time because they're in meetings all the time. And then for me, if people say that, I start to think about how there's probably something else broken in that work system that's resulting in all of this. So it's really just mm-hmm. a symptom of something else that's gone wrong. So I would say that's one of the things that they self-report. Another one would be just lack of work-life balance, which are linked in that there just seems to be this great urgency to complete a myriad of things. And then people don't even feel that they're actually progressing in any way. So those are self-reported things. And I would say the things that we observe, though, is also just how the teams are not healthy in that they're operating within cultures that don't actually enable them to be able to turn on their best selves at work, really. Operating in a culture of fear, for instance. In fact, psychological safety, I would say, is a huge factor in this. So psychological safety is all about whether you feel safe enough in a particular space to be able to present new ideas, to admit to mistakes, or being able to try out new things without some sort of punishment or some sort of negative mm-hmm. consequence. Mm-hmm. And what we find a lot of the time is that they're operating within a low psychological safety environments, and that more than anything actually holds them back from even achieving some of the basic things that they believe that they should be, and they just have no idea why. It just seems like an intractable challenge. Like, why aren't we able to go and do this? But we're able, as outsiders, to go and see, it's like, okay, there's actually a problem here.
That's fascinating. And it's fascinating to me because it almost links back to the purpose conversation that we were having earlier. Because if you want people to be creative and you want people to contribute a lot to an organization, I'm guessing these are some of the things that you need to have: good purpose, like psychological safety, and of course the ability, as you said, to almost decompress sometimes, or at least have quiet time to think. Because that's what brings, I guess, your best self into the team, or best contributions to a team. Besides those things, what else do you find doesn't doesn't get individuals contributing as much to teams as they possibly can. And not that it's about really people contributing all the time and being always on, but I suppose being in a place where you feel like your contributions matter. What holds that back in teams? Because of course every organization, every creative team wants the best out of their people. You know, we all want to have teams that feel engaged, that feel like they can contribute, that feel like their contributions matter. What holds that back, or what makes teams not to get that out of their people as much as they can?
I would say also it's rewarded also drives or contributes to the behavior, and as a consequence influences the culture. So I hear a lot of the time organizations that say they want a collaborative workplace, all these things, and then they go and reward individual effort, for instance, and in a particular way that actually makes it impossible for these people to be incentivized to work with other people. So I think, just being really cognizant of how and what you reward as well, and not necessarily monetarily, is like who gets the recognition, for instance. So if something is really done well, like when do we choose to go and do that? Who do we recognize in that way? Those kind of things can actually influence the people's behavior. But also, I would say, there are actually multiple other things. We created a whole canvas out of this, which was inspired by a lot of the work that we were reading and the people who were influencing us. And I would say things such as having agreements, just being deliberate, I would say, is actually the biggest story. Just being deliberate about how you do things. Can we have agreements as a team on how we do certain things? How we actually operate, how we want to make ourselves feel like we belong in this team. And I think that's probably something that we see consistently in a lot of teams just being absent, just the deliberateness of this. So I think they just make an assumption that things have worked in a particular way. I just joined this team and I just continue in that way. And there's never a moment of just questioning. It's like, wait a minute, is this really the best way for us to be communicating? Is this the best way for us to be making decisions? Who should be making decisions? That sort of thing. And, just not taking the time out to go and do that. You're just basically maintaining the status quo, which may or may not be really useful for what it is that you're trying to achieve. And in many instances, quite harmful, because as the environment changes, so your own organization and also the marketplace, it changes, but you don't, because we're all just sitting with these assumptions in each other's heads, but none of that is actually ever vocalized. None of it actually comes out as, that we can actually speak about it. Just to give a simple example of something that actually happened that we saw a lot of during the lockdown was just the idea of how and when we communicate. So some leaders would, try to show a bit of sympathy, and to their credit, and we saw a lot of people actually make a bit of an effort to try and be more accommodating, basically, of the situation. Then they would say, okay, we won't be sending out emails after 6 o'clock, after 6 p.m., for instance. And then the leader would then send out an email at 10 p.m. And then people just don't really understand, what's actually really happening. Supposed to respond to that? Is this the behavior that we're meant to be modeling? And that's because there was a break in that kind of agreement. And even then, those are people who have taken the step of even having agreement in the first place. So a lot of what happened was I'd send you an email, you don't respond, I send it to you on WhatsApp, and then this person is so frustrated because their understanding is that WhatsApp is a private space for them, yes, and their family and their friends and all of that. But you're getting frustrated on your own, you go and vent or you just respond in an antisocial way back in your team. But, you know, the, all of these things could have been worked out had we made agreements in terms of this is these are the boundaries that we are putting around the type of communications, all of that. I mean, simple example, but you would be surprised at how much that can actually blow up and start affecting the work in a material ways.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show. It does. I think from what you're saying, I get a sense that it also almost either breeds or leads to a kind of toxicity within the workplace, because then it means if you don't find a piece of communication as urgent as I think it should be to you, mm-hmm, when you are, you know, in a position to almost to contribute and to be creative and to work and to deliver, it breeds that kind of toxicity. It breeds a kind of unhealthy work environment. And there are many habits, I think, that were unhealthy during lockdown that we started having during lockdown, like the many meetings to where some people felt as though, you know, the company's trying to keep tabs on them, or at least people felt as though if I'm not in 100 meetings a day, I'm not working, kind of situation. Yeah. And of course, coming out of that, things are completely different now. Our work has very little to do with meetings. Meetings have a lot to do with us delivering on the work rather than sitting in meetings for meeting's sake. I get that. And I think in closing, Balesa, how would you say that companies should do in reimagining work, or where do we start in reimagining how work could be, or reimagining how teams and team dynamics and organizations, more so creative work, can be?
I would say the number one thing is to get deliberate about how you work. So it's not just doing what you've always done necessarily, unless if that's working for you. But I would say start to query some of the things that you're already doing. Are they actually still serving you? Are they still serving your purpose and strategy? Go and look into that. And I emphasize the how of work, because I think we're all quite versed in talking about the what of work. Mm-hmm. But the how of work is really important as well. And then related to that, I would say create the platform or the space for you to be able to have those kind of conversations and give yourself permission to be able to change things when they are no longer working. So a simple thing is to run retrospectives, for instance. So perhaps every 2 or 3 months, go and look back at the work that you've done. How did we approach it? What worked? What didn't? For instance, it's just a good place to start. But of course, there are just more useful questions as well that can start to emerge from those kind of conversations. But we saw that when people start paying attention to that, their awareness has actually peaked, and they are a little bit more conscious about how they actually do things, which affects the quality of the things that they're doing. So I think yeah, but those two things are definitely things that I would recommend to any team. And then I would say, if I had to add a third thing, is that that you are quite inclusive of the team as well. So collaboration, that word gets thrown around quite a lot, but it really actually shows up in the way that it tries to define it. Where you do actually have an inclusive space where people can actually present ideas and they are considered truly, like, genuinely, and not just, it's not just for optics, and that you are able to put those ideas together and you're able to weigh them up and know what to actually do with it together. And I think there's just too much of like solo effort in some of the teams that we've seen. And it's appropriate for some things, but a lot of the time, especially for bigger conversations, such as the how you work, you will probably need everyone to be on board.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think one of the biggest things that I'm getting out of that, and there are many things, but one of them is beyond what you say you are as an organization. It's who you truly are with between you and your team. Actually, that's I'm getting a sense of that.
Yes, and I'd like to add to that as well, because I was just so fascinated reading about the purpose of systems. And it got me thinking about organizations and how they will have beautiful purpose statements. We want to connect women of the world to blah, 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 that sort of thing. And it sounds really great. But in actuality, what they're doing is perhaps being profitable with shareholders, which is great, but they're also creating misery within the organization. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So your actual purpose is probably profit and misery, to be honest.
Yeah, it's experienced differently from how it's communicated, yeah.
Yeah, so what I mean is if we were to be honest with ourselves, and I think it's a good place to start to, start having any sort of change and moving in the right direction, is do you want to see what is our actual purpose? Like, what is the output of the effort that we're putting into this work every day and all the resources we're putting in? What's the actual output of it? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time you'll find there's a people cost. There are people who have been allowed to suffer for whatever other output that there is. And that's, for me, is a cause for you to start looking at ways to change.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you, Palesa. That was that was incredibly insightful. Thank you for that. And yeah, thank you for the work you do. I mean, it's really insightful, and it's the background work that happens without people seeing, but it actually builds better and more effective teams.
And thank you for having me on. I think for me, that I've decided that this is my life's purpose. I want to make the world of work better for human beings. And I really appreciate being able to have a platform to speak about that.
Awesome, awesome.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mongezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mongezi.com.